It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in beautiful Arizona from Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com studios. And today we're going to talk about the third rail, Israel. That's it. Oh, you want to get the phones lit up, man? Just start talking about Israel. Well, let me go ahead and get the number out now so I didn't, you know, get you in the middle of it later. Here we go. Ready? Got a pen? Got a pen? Here we go. 866-986-NEWS. 866-986-6397 here on Liberty News Radio. All right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to, the first and second hour, we're going to talk about first hour. We have Josh Rubner. He's National Advocacy Director of the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation. It's a national coalition of more than 325 organizations working to end U.S. support for Israel's illegal 43-year military occupation of the Palestinian West Bank, East Jerusalem, Gaza Strip, and to change U.S. policy toward Israel, Palestine, to support human rights, international law, and equality. That is what I want to start off with right there. Ask that. Now, Rubner, Mr. Rubner is, he's, you know, has some interest in this in the past. You know, he's a former analyst of Middle East Affairs at the Congressional Research Service. Now, these are, now I want to ask you about that. I got you there, Josh. Josh, you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, there we go. Just go ahead and tell me. You know, the Congressional Research Service, okay, it says here, a federal government agency providing members of Congress with policy analysis. Okay, I'm, you know, I thought that was AIPAC.
Well, there is a federal government agency that is supposed to provide members of Congress with nonpartisan, very factual analysis. Basically, it's basically like a unbiased think tank for members of Congress, and they
right.
use it for research purposes.
Okay, now let's, you know, let's go ahead and, you know, I just want to make sure we get up front, so you know. Okay, hardcore, no compromise, libertarian. I'm like, why is my tax money going to over outside our border to do anything with anybody? I don't care. I talk to all the support Israel people and so on. I go, am I anti-Semitic because I don't want my tax money going outside the country? Yes or no? I just want to know. I mean, I just, you know, nope. I don't want it going to Jordan. I don't want it going to Egypt. I don't want it going to Israel. I don't want, heck, I don't want it, my money going to freaking Montana. Okay? So I'm done. But then I see on here, we have, you want to change U.S. policy towards Israel and Palestine to support human rights, international law, and equality. Well, now I'm seeing that I'm going to start getting lobbied to take that money that goes to Israel and just put it somewhere else you want it to go.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily a question of redirecting foreign aid money. I think it's really a question of redirecting our foreign policy so that we're not providing Israel with both the diplomatic means and the military means to commit human rights abuses against Palestinians.
Okay, but you're not advocating. No, I just need to know. I mean, let's be up straight up front before we even get into it. Up front, at the end of our conversation, it's going to be, yeah, but that money would be better spent towards, I mean, you're just going to redirect it, or are we just stopping sending money? I mean, because then the conversation's over, okay? We can just like, hey, you know, we're done. We're not sending money. We're keeping it here. I guess that's our foreign policy, is we don't have any policy to send money foreign. I mean, done. Done. Is that what you're advocating?
Well, we have a website, which is aidtoisrael.org, that looks at the costs associated with different communities providing military aid to Israel and what that money could be used for instead at the local community level to support unmet needs. So our organization definitely supports redirecting that money that we're currently sending in weapons to Israel toward unmet domestic needs here at home, like health care, affordable housing, education, things like that.
Yeah, see, it's still taking my money, you know. All right, well, let's go ahead and talk about Israel first. I just want to let you know that's, you know, in the end, when it comes to that, we can better take a 45, put it up against your forehead, take your money, and then redistribute it for fill in the blank over here in Montana. And I'm thinking, you know, it's still a government agent taking my money. You know, I don't get to spend it on me or my kids or whatever. It's, you know, whether it's, you know, in Montana or in Jordan or Jerusalem, to me, it doesn't make any difference. So you took my money. I mean, you understand my point, right?
I understand your perspective.
Okay, yep. So that's my perspective. So let's go ahead and go, and we'll give you the opportunity for you to give us your perspective. Now, your website is endtheoccupation.org. So and they can reach you at Congress at endtheoccupation.org. Okay, so we give you a little commercial there. Now, what I want is to tell me, when you're talking to Congress, when you're trying to influence them, you're wanting them to stop using U.S. tax dollars, I would imagine, in forwarding or subsidizing or giving arms and resources and cash and whatever to Israel. Am I correct?
Absolutely, because these weapons that are being provided to Israel at taxpayer expense are being misused in violation of U.S. law, in violation of international law, to commit human rights abuses against Palestinians and to enforce Israel's illegal military occupation of Palestinian territory.
Okay, well, we'll get into details of that. No, I mean, well, we got plenty of time. We'll get into that. Now, my second question is, as you're trying to influence Congress and say, you know, we're giving the money to these guys and they're doing bad stuff. We'll get into bad stuff later, okay? Me, I don't even care. I just don't want them getting money, problem solved. But So I'm going, okay, so you're going in opposition to who? I mean, you know, they're listening to you go, okay, yeah, you make some persuasive argument, thank you, and, you know, whatever, and so on. But there's somebody else that's coming in the door right after or before you that's influencing them to do this. Who is that?
There are many different players involved, one of which is the America-Israel Public Affairs Committee, which is probably the largest and most influential actor in this equation, and they're able to mobilize thousands and thousands of supporters to descend on Capitol Hill once a year to argue in favor of this military aid going to Israel. And they're backed up by other organizations such as Christians United for Israel, which is also capable of mobilizing several thousand people to support that military aid package to Israel. And then you also have the actual weapons manufacturers who are profiting from this government subsidy year after year, and they're also an important constituency advocating for the continuation of this military aid to Israel.
And they got to have some kind of a rhetoric. And they're saying, we got to do this because it means jobs in Georgia. I mean, you know, what's their moral high ground? We have to support Israel because what?
I think each of those different interest groups pursue that question from a bit of a different vantage point. The pro-Israel organizations, whether they're Jewish or Christian, tend to wrap their rhetoric around issues of security, and Israel is a supposed democracy like the United States and we need to help it, or Israel is integral to the fight against terrorism. You know, some version or combination of those types of arguments. And then that economic benefit that, yes, it creates jobs in this and that constituency for this and that member of Congress, I think is tact more taken by the weapons manufacturers themselves.
Okay, now, I give a little bit more of your bio. I mean, you got graduate degree in international affairs from Johns Hopkins. I mean, you know, it doesn't suck. And so I'm, you know, it's advanced international studies, and you're blah, blah, blah. You got some skills, all right? Well, you bring that to bear, and you go to a congressman, and you say, hey, man, you know, what principle are you using to argue the questions about well, this money goes to give my constituencies jobs, and we need to do that because that's more important than, I don't know, stealing from me to go give to somebody else, all right? We need to, what other argument are you bringing when they start talking about Israel as an ally in the war against fill in the blank? I mean, you know, what is your rhetoric to counter that?
Well, what we do is we look at U.S. laws, in particular the Arms Export Control Act and the Foreign Assistance Act, which both place strict regulations on how countries can use U.S. weapons, whether they're given to them at taxpayer expense or whether they're bought on the open market.
We'll start there when we come back, because the law says, well, since when are they following the law? And if it gets in the way, they just change it, ignore it, do whatever, see you in court. Well, we're going to talk about that when we come back with Josh Rubner from National Advocate for the Director of U.S. Campaign to End Israeli Occupation here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Ernest Hancock and my special guest, Josh Rubner, National Advocacy Director of the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation. Well, you know, let me tell you how you end occupations. You stop funding it. That's how you do it. You know, so we're kind of talking about that a little bit. And I want to go down that vein still. You know, the one thing that I'm looking to see, is there been any tracking, you kind of reverse engineer the support of each of these groups that you're going to do an opposition with, and where their money comes from, and, you know, Fred's the cousin and next brother-in-law of the guy in the next group next to him, linked arms, and the other guy down the line is his former girlfriend's ex-roommate, and it's just, I mean, how connected are these groups?
Well, I think there's a lot of overlap, especially between the different public policy and advocacy organizations that are supportive of Israeli occupation and apartheid. That being said, you know, they all come at it from slightly different vantage points and different political perspectives, and that's why there are so many different ones kind of all over the political spectrum.
Now, I'll guarantee you what the one thing they have in common is money, support, goes to Israel out of my pocket. That is the common denominator. Guarantee it. So I'm, you know, they can blah, blah, blah all they want. Bottom line is my grandkids are paying, you know, for the debt, the more money going to Israel. And I'm wanting to know what the real motivation, all these issues and everything comes down to, yeah, it's just an excuse for them to get the goodies. Now let's go ahead and talk about your focus here is the treatment of the Palestinians there. Why would you focus on that? I mean, it seems to me that it's such, that is just a byproduct of us funding Israel to be able to do this kind of stuff. You're focusing on the Palestinian thing because that's a tactic, or is that your goal? I mean, what is it you're trying to do?
Well, we're focusing on that because we believe that the United States should have a foreign policy that's based on and supportive of human rights and international law. And when it comes to our country's support for Israel, we're funding and supporting the exact opposite. We're funding oppression. We're funding massive human rights abuses against Palestinians. And that's not good from both a moral perspective and a realpolitik perspective, because it really, I think, shows up the really hollow nature of our commitment to democracy when we're providing Israel with the weapons that it's using to oppress and deny Palestinians freedom.
You know, I'll give you a realpolitik, is that the human rights that's being violated is them stealing my money. You know, I can't get around that. If you're advocating for, you know, we're using my money that they took by coercion and force and said that we are violating this other person in another country country's human rights were, and I'm, you don't address the human right of them stealing from me. You kind of lost the argument before you even got started. You know, I'm, if you want to, you want to support human rights, support them, quit taking my money to do these kinds of things. You know, wars of aggression, wars of convenience, wars of wars. I mean, it's just amazing to me that everybody kind of forgets that part. It's okay to take the money. It's just if we did, you know, a fill in the blank noble cause that we're fulfilling. Well, of course they always got some noble cause. You know, it's just whose perspective is more noble than the other. So I'm going, how about we have the noble cause of not taking my money? I mean, does that ever even come up?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I think all people in this country, whether they support more or less taxation, should be outraged by the fact that in this case their tax dollars are being used to commit really grave human rights violations against another people who have done nothing wrong to us and should never have their human rights violated under any circumstance.
Okay, no, I'm with you. I mean, I understand your point, and it's a good point. It's just that, you know, it kind of falls flat when it's, you know, we should be outraged by the money that they stole from me being spent on this, but you're advocating for human rights that we shouldn't be spending it on that. We should do something else while you're still not advocating for me not being stolen from. I mean, you understand my perspective, right?
I do. And I think we come at this from different perspectives, which is okay.
Okay, as long as we understand each other.
We're a progressive organization that believes that, you know, there are positive things that the government can and should do, and we would much
not
rather
steal from me.
We would much rather see our tax dollars being used to support the legitimate needs of people here in the United States rather than spent on human rights abuses against Palestinians.
Okay, well, at least I, you know, it seems like I might be able to get that out of you. Are we advocating whatever money they did steal from me, they keep it in the United States?
Well, we don't take any position on, you know, what the overall tax structure of the United States should be.
Well, you're saying the spend structure. I mean, we should be supporting, I mean, it says right here, to support human rights, international law, and equality. And I'm like,
well, that's cost-free. That doesn't cost anything to support human rights and international law. These are principles that our foreign policy should be based on. And if you look at our country's foreign policy around the globe, there are many, many instances of cases where the United States is supporting oppressive and autocratic regimes that violate human rights. So, you know, across the board, the United States should be pursuing a policy that supports human rights and international law, and that's not something that has to cost a dime.
It's called just let the American people do what they want. You know, now it's illegal for us to support certain organizations, even do humanitarian effort over somewhere because the president doesn't like it. I mean, you know, it's craziness. You're not supporting my human right to be able to spend my money, you know, freely with whomever I want for whatever I want. No. You go to Guantanamo for that. You know, so I'm just, it's craziness. Okay. So now let's go ahead and take the rest of the time. We'll focus on the Palestinian issue. What is got you going? What is Israel doing? Why are they doing it? You know, it seems to me like if you're a Palestinian there, you got like a special license plate and ID and armbands. And I mean, it's like Nazi Germany in reverse. What's going on?
Well, there's a lot of discrimination. There's a lot of apartheid policies that Israel has imposed upon the Palestinians. To boil it down to a nutshell, what you have is two competing nationalisms, Zionism versus Palestinian nationalism, both struggling for control over the same land. And in a process that's lasted the last 100-plus years, you've had a situation where Israel has been able to impose control over 100% of historic Palestine. In other words, what's today Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories. So in 1948, when Israel was created, it took possession of 78% of the land of historic Palestine and ethnically cleansed the majority of its indigenous inhabitants from their homes and properties to create a so-called Jewish state. And in 1967, Israel occupied the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza Strip, the remaining 22% of historic Palestine, and has been in continuous belligerent military occupation of those Palestinian territories until this very day. So what you have is a situation where Palestinians are treated in an apartheid situation. Either they live under military occupation in the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem, or they live as very second-class citizens of Israel, or they live as refugees who are exiled from their homeland that Israel won't allow to return to their homes.
Okay. And this is perpetrated and perpetuated because...
Well, I'd say the overriding ethos and philosophy of both Zionism and then, you know, its inheritor, the State of Israel, has been to get as much land of historic Palestine with as little Palestinians on it as possible. And Israel has never yet come to the point where it said, you know what? You're equal human beings to us. Let's live as equal human beings in this land that we need to share together. And that's really been the essence of the failure of all the peace processes. It's been an Israeli attempt to impose a very unfair situation that's really analogous to what South Africa did back in the 1980s when they set up Bantustans and they tried to railroad black South Africans into these fake mini-states that had no power, no sovereignty, no independence, and no economic prospects, and deceived the international community that they were now somehow magically free. This is, in essence, what Israel's tried to do, and Palestinians haven't bit on yet.
You know, that's one thing. I've done this issue before, and one question that I had, and we go into the break here. You can go ahead and think about it, and I want you to respond to this when we come back. Let's just imagine that we gave Israel everything it wanted or says it does. Would that mean that we're done giving them money? Is it over now? Are we good? You know, are they happy? Can they be made happy? Do we even know what they want? Are they clear? I don't know. You think about it. Let me know what it is. I mean, if they got a bullet point, a 3x5 card, index card with all the goodies they want, I just want to know what it is. When we come back, we'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Arizona, where it's starting to cool off. Yeah, baby. And we're broadcasting from Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com on Liberty News Radio around the country. Now, on the phone with me, I have Josh Rubner. He's trying to, I don't know, it's a U.S. campaign to end Israeli occupation, but I'm not really sure how effective that is without everybody understanding what the heck's going on. So we're trying to understand what's going on. And I'll tell you from my perspective, I know what's going on. They're taking my money without my permission and giving it to Israel. And I don't care if they're giving it to whomever. It doesn't matter to me. Stop stealing, problem solved. You can go be whatever, and I voluntarily want to go help one side or the other, fine. Well, you want to do that. Oh, you're Muslim, or you think they're doing good works in some place with a crescent logo on the thing and helping war-torn, mind-blown-up little children. I want to know. Heck no. U.S. policy, we're going Guantanamo for your butt. Okay. It's like that, is it? All right. We're in a post 9/11 world. Mm-hmm. Then we have, Fox News investor, one of the co-owners of Fox News along with Rupert Murdoch is funding the building of the mosque. And they kind of forget to tell you that part. You know, so I'm going, oh, okay, so it's all a game. It's election year game. It's like when I was a young man growing up in 88, it's flag burning amendment. It's all about flag burning. Yeah, save American flag, vote for the president here because he's for having a constitutional amendment so you can't burn the flag. I mean, that's it. That's our number one issue. That's it. That's what we got to deal with. And every single one of these issues that come up about Israel, man, they come out of the word anti-this, you're just bad. What? Because I don't want somebody stealing my money? I don't care what you do with it. You know, it doesn't matter to me. I don't care what your noble cause is. Stop stealing my money. Well, they're stealing my money. We got an agreement now. Josh tells me that between now and 2018, we've already committed and got a nice little agreement and love you long time for $30 billion in military aid going to Israel. And how much of that you want to guarantee comes back in the form of a congressman? We need to make sure you keep funding this. I'm willing to bet all my money, which is a little bitty baby amount. But you know it's happening. So I asked a question as we went into the break. Assuming Israel got everything it wanted, said, okay, we go, you know what? We're not going to give you any more of this $30 billion anymore. You get all the West Bank. You get all the Gaza Strip. You get the Golan Heights. All yours. Now, knock yourself out. Whatever. And we're going to, like, carve off a little bit out and create a $2 billion a year for just a couple of years, a big, giant floating island out in the middle of the desert, Egypt, in the Sahara, on the coast of, and then Jordan, kind of whatever, and boom, Palestinians all go there. Super states, all done. Now we're saving money. Would that work? Or is there something else Israel wants? What is it that you think they want, Josh? What is the final, they won't be coming after my wallet ever again?
Well, I think that Israel perceives itself as a garrison state, and because it has attempted to deny freedom for the Palestinian people for more than 60 years, as long as it continues these policies, it's going to have to behave in a militaristic way. So, you know, as long as Palestinians don't have human rights, as long as Palestinians don't have their freedom, Israel is going to continue this very aggressive, very militarized posture toward them. And therefore, I don't see any end to the steady stream of demand for additional weapon systems and more weapon systems provided at U.S. taxpayer expense. So it's really in the interests of people who oppose taxes in general to work for a just resolution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict so that Israel can cease to be a garrison state, live as a normal state, in peace with its neighbors, and take away that justification for ever-increasing military aid.
Well, it seems to me like their policies is what's guaranteeing the money coming in military aid.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, the fact that the United States is pumping not only $30 billion of weapons into Israel, but, you know, maybe $10 billion more for Egypt over the next decade, plus an estimated $100 billion of weapon sales to Gulf states over the coming decade. You know, this vast militarization of the Middle East that the United States is promoting is certainly not going to resolve conflicts. It's only going to perpetuate and exacerbate them.
Well, did it ever occur to anybody that that's why they're doing it?
Well, that would be a very cynical interpretation of U.S. foreign policy, but one that I can definitely understand.
I'm wondering, you know, what other interpretation you can come up with. I mean, these wars aren't meant to be won. They're meant to be fought and fought and fought and fought. And it's like Vietnam. You know, the only reason Vietnam stopped, the soldiers just stopped fighting it. We're good. We're done. Oh, I'm sorry. You got another officer says I got to go out in the bush and get killed. Boom. He's dead, too. Up to 5,000-6,000 officers were fragged by their own men. That's why they started bombing Cambodia and doing the big bombing of North Vietnam, because they couldn't get the soldiers to fight it. And they finally just said, you know, yeah, we're done. And then they overwhelmed. So we're going into Iraq and Afghanistan. I just saw this weekend the Tillman story about how they tried to make him a poster child, you know, for military recruitment. And his family didn't have nothing to do with it. And that was very interesting. And I'm just, as time goes on and more of these, you go on freedomsphoenix.com, the top half of the page, there's a couple of stories up there, and one's Iraq, Afghanistan veteran coming back telling about all the atrocities he participated in and so on. And my producer, she's a young woman, saw it, put it up, went and looked up his site, saw another video, put it up. She said, you got to watch this. And the stuff that I've seen before, she was so taken aback by this stuff, she didn't know that these kinds of things were going on because they're sanitized from this. This generation is insulated, and they're just now starting to get, you know, she's in the past couple months being my producer. She's starting to learn a lot of things. You have these people that are communicating in instantaneous communications on Facebook with each other, all the social networks. You have an entire generation going, nah, this is bad. But You have the military-industrial complex, of which it seems to me like Israel's like an aircraft carrier out in the Middle East for us, and they are going, ooh, you're going to be giving us some money. Well, who's going to stop them? How's it going to stop? What is the mechanism that would stop it? Help me out here, Josh. You know, what possible end could bring this to an end?
Well, I think you're right that more and more people are rising up and opposing U.S. militarism and this permanent war economy that we have. And I think in the long term, that is the only solution, is for people in this country to claw back what the military-industrial complex has been able to do in this country. And all of President Eisenhower's worst predictions have come true, and even more so than I'm sure he could have imagined 50 years ago. So it's very disturbing that, you know, one out of every two federal dollars is either spent on war, paying for previous wars, or paying for benefits for people who fought wars. And, you know, the fact
and
that
interest on the
we're
wars.
Going bankrupt to do it is really driving this country into the ground.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, they're going to strangle the goose that laid the golden egg. Is that also part of the plan? They got something else up their sleeve? What kind of role does the international community play in this, or United Nations or NATO or some international organizations in this Israel thing? I thought that they're all kind of slapping them on the wrist or being bad a bunch of different times. It doesn't seem like it has any impact.
Well, because the United States has veto power in the United Nations, it's been able to block that body from taking any international effective measures against Israel. But the UN has passed dozens and dozens of resolutions condemning its actions, telling it that it has to withdraw from occupied territories, you know, condemning different aspects of its policies. But the fact that the United States can block the implementation of any sanctions has really allowed Israel to keep on pursuing these policies in defiance of the rest of the international community.
Well, let me ask one thing before we go. I want to know what the people in Israel think. Certainly the younger, the next generation, are they tired of this? Are they willing to stand up against the man? Do they even have a chance? Are they using electronic voting in Israel? I mean, what? I'm wondering what role do the people there have to play in this thing?
I think it's fair to say that most Israelis just want peace and quiet, and right now for the most part have it, because the policies that have been imposed on the Palestinians are allowing Israel to go about its daily business pretty much unperturbed while Palestinians suffer under a brutal military occupation. But that being said, you know, there are voices within Israel that are opposed to its country's apartheid policies towards Palestinians and are working to end them, you know, in as much as there are people trying to work against the military-industrial complex in this country.
Well, I'm glad somebody's out there giving what for, but I tell you what, you want to make me feel a whole bunch better, you know, start advocating for my human rights not to be stole from, and we'll have the same effect, know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Well, you think about that. And I got to thank Josh Rubner. You know, you can get hold of him at endtheoccupation.org. You can email him at congress@endtheoccupation.org. Josh Rubner, thanks for coming on. Next hour, we got Kalila Sabra. She's on the same issue from a different perspective. She's actually over there working with the people, and we're going to hear some personal stories. I want to know what life's like on the ground. How is our money being used to do what? And the ramifications of that, you know, payback's a bee, you know what I mean? We're going to talk about when we come back more Third Rail Israel.